Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This episode is brought to you in collaboration with Viviscal. Hello, hi, and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I'm your host, Emma Gunnar Wardner, and in this episode, I'm talking all things hair loss, hair thinning, and hair health with Viviscal's panel of experts. Viviscal is the UK's most clinically researched hair growth supplement, and in addition to surveying 2,000 women to examine hair health and attitudes on hair loss, they have gathered Dr. Martin Wade, consultant dermatologist at the London Skin and Hair Clinic, Eve Kalinic, nutritional therapist and gut health specialist, and Christelle Lundqvist, founder and creative director of Steel Salon, to take part in hashtag Healthy Hair Talks. And that's the conversation you're going to hear now. If you're a regular listener to the podcast or you follow me on social media, you'll know I've had my battles with hair loss and hair thinning and have tried everything, both in terms of topical treatments and supplements, in order to try to keep my hair in the healthiest condition possible. Today, the subject of hair loss and hair thinning is a huge part of the beauty conversation, perhaps more so than ever before. And the Viviscal brand has been dedicated and committed to clinical research for more than 25 years and was keen to understand modern women's attitudes on the subject after founding Hair Loss Awareness Month back in 2008. Hair Loss Awareness Month is the month of May, which is when this episode of the podcast was recorded. The survey revealed that 41% of women are currently experiencing or have previously experienced hair loss or some form of hair thinning, and that 40% of women are unhappy with the current appearance and overall health of their hair. Clearly, this is something we need to keep talking about. In this episode, Dr. Martin Wade, Eve Kalinic, Christelle Lundqvist, and Kim Asprey, Viviscal's education ambassador, share their insight from their daily dealing with people looking for the causes and solutions to their hair loss, hair thinning, and hair health. All the links from the episode can be found in the show notes, which can be found wherever you are streaming and downloading this episode. And for all things Viviscal, just visit viviscal.co.uk, follow at Viviscal Hair UK, or search the hashtag Healthy Hair Talks. So here it is, a healthy hair talk with Viviscal's panel of experts on The Emma Gunn Show. Right, well, this is incredibly exciting because this is the biggest podcast to have ever happened on The Emma Gunn Show. We have not one, not two, not three, not four, but five people on the show today. And I'm going to go around and get everyone to introduce themselves. So, Martin Wade, you are consultant dermatologist at the London Skin and Hair Clinic.
That's right.
Hello, welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here because you obviously have a huge amount of experience working in clinic with people who have hair loss issues. Is that fair to say?
Yep, absolutely. So I'm a dermatologist, but I also see a lot of patients with hair loss. So on a daily basis, I'm seeing patients with a wide range of hair loss conditions, all ages, men, women.
Interesting. And we'll talk obviously in detail about what you see in the clinic. Christelle, who is the founder and creative director of Steel Salons. Hello and welcome.
Hi, thank you very much.
You obviously must see a completely different side of hair loss and hair thinning, because people who go and see Martin are obviously going with potentially medical conditions, and people are coming to you, a salon environment, talking about maybe their hair not doing what they would like it to do, or maybe they speak to you about the first signs of change that they're noticing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. And it's interesting because we see it almost on a daily basis as well. So I guess the difference there would be clients suffering more maybe from hair breakage due to misusing heated tools. It could also be over usage of chemical products like colour, for example. And it could be sort of hair thinning from tension. So hair extensions, for example. So I guess it's slightly different to what Martin would see.
Yeah. And we also have Eve Kalinick, friend of the show and nutritional therapist and author. Welcome back.
Hi, nice to be back.
I can't believe you've not come back sooner.
I know, it's been too long, hasn't it? It's all this swanky new equipment and everything as well.
Now, you are a nutritional therapist, as everyone knows, because your episode on gut health was fantastic. But you are also seeing this more in your consultations, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm seeing a lot of clients that are, you know, either losing hair or have noticed hair thinning, and actually, you know, at various ages and across both men and women as well. So, yeah, it's definitely something that's on the increase.
On the increase. And finally, we have Kim Asprey, who you are Viviscal educator.
Yes.
Viviscal educator.
I've worked with the Viviscal brand for over 10 years now, so it's something really close to my heart, and I've spoken to so many women about this issue over
because
that
this
time.
Is the thing from your experience as a Viviscal educator, you actually have a lot of sort of face time, or you communicate a lot with women here who are actually dealing with hair loss, hair thinning, and actually taking the supplements. So you really understand the vocabulary that people are using and the issues that they're going through.
Yeah.
And quite how distressing it can be and emotional.
Yeah, I think if there's one thing I've come to realise, it's just how important hair is to us, you know, and when it goes wrong, it can really impact on someone's confidence and in some cases even damage self-esteem. So I think that's a really important thing.
And the reason why I wanted to work with Viviscal and wanted to get such a big panel together to talk about this is because Viviscal have actually done a brand survey. And right off the bat, 41% of women are currently experiencing or have previously experienced hair loss or some form of hair thinning. Now, that's a lot of women. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people. And the first thing I want listeners to take away from this, and I hope that you will back me up on this, is you're not alone. There's actually some comfort to be had here. This is not a situation that you're dealing with solo. Wouldn't you say that's true?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. I mean, the survey just shows how common it is. I mean, there's a whole range of degrees of hair loss as well. And often women and men don't feel comfortable talking to, you know, their partners, their friends, or seeking medical advice about their hair loss issues. So, you know, often they bury themselves away, maybe do a bit of internet searching, looking for solutions, but not being open and talking about the problem.
And actually, do you feel that when you have a one-on-one appointment with somebody, you're actually validating their concerns, and you're actually putting them on a path? Do you feel that those internet searches, it still isn't really real when they come and speak to you and they understand that actually they're not imagining it, they're completely on the money, they have noticed something that's actually happening? Do you notice that that's like a real transition moment for somebody going through this journey?
Yes, I mean, I see signs of relief. You know, being told that you actually do have a hair loss condition can sometimes be upsetting, but I mean, we always have to be truthful to our patients, and they actually appreciate that. You know, they've been given a diagnosis, or you know, that, as you said, validated what they were concerned about. And then the next step's the positive part of the consultation, to say, all right, well, now we've identified what the problem is, and, you know, that's all the hard work, but now let's talk about how we can make things better. And that's obviously the time when they you know, feel more positive about what can be done for their hair. And a lot of women out there, and men, think that you know, their treatments, the treatments just don't work, there's nothing that's going to help. I think because there's so much on the market, and a lot of the things don't work so well, people just assume that everything doesn't work. So actually, you know, educating the patient and saying to them, well, actually, these are the clinically proven treatment options, and, you know, this is the evidence for why we're recommending what we do, gives them more confidence, and then they'll be more likely to adhere to the advice that we give them.
Yeah. Can we take a couple of steps back, though, because what I think is really interesting, and I think all of you can weigh in on this, is actually to outline what the causes are of hair loss, and actually the distinction between hair loss and hair thinning or quality of hair changing. Mm-hmm. And maybe start with you, Martin.
So how long have we got? I mean, this is a huge topic. This is a huge topic. And what I find is that it all gets clumped together. And what might be hair thinning for you is hair loss for someone else. And, it, you know, we confuse ourselves. And even in the medical literature, we probably confuse ourselves with using terms interchangeably. So I make the first division of hair loss and hair breakage. And so hair breakage is what we've spoken about before, which is where the hair shaft breaks mid-shaft, and that could be due to overprocessing or the use of heated tongs or dyeing the hair too much or bleaching the hair too much. So the hair's not actually falling out from the root, it's breaking. Mm-hmm. So advice for correcting that's completely different to someone who might be losing their hair falling out from the root. Mm-hmm. Now, with the hair loss conditions, there's a wide gamut of what can be happening. I mean, the most common form of hair loss for men is male pattern baldness. We see an equivalent female pattern hair loss in women, which is a lot more complicated, has a lot more differing triggers or things that can be driving that, like hormones or medication. Then we've got the inflammatory causes of hair loss, alopecia areata. We've got other inflammatory causes of hair loss, the scarring alopecia. So it's a huge field. And when you Google hair loss, it all just gets clumped together. So one of the things that I do in my consultation is, you know, the first thing is to take a good history and get to the bottom of the problem, so we can then say, all right, this is the type of hair loss you've got, this is how we can address it. Mm-hmm. And that's very important, I think, to rather than, oh, let's try this, let's try that, let's jump to this or whatever. It's doing it in a methodical way.
Yeah. And, I mean, I've said before, I really want to make sure that the listener comes away with lots of hope and lots of comfort. Mm-hmm. With the majority of those issues that you see on a day-to-day basis, are there actionable plans that could lead to an improvement?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So there's always something that we can do for hair loss. Some of the more severe conditions we sometimes preventing it getting worse, but for the more common ones like female pattern hair loss, alopecia areata, there are treatments out there that can work and can bring back hair.
Mm. Yeah. And obviously you are a dermatologist, you work in a skin and hair clinic, and you are an incredible resource, but who can people really realistically turn to? Do they have to seek out someone like you?
So ideally, yes, but obviously that's not practical. So unfortunately, in the medical profession, I mean, dermatology is a niche area, mm-hmm. and then if you take hair loss is a niche area of dermatology, which is already a niche area. So there's not a lot of expertise out there, and I do often find that people have gone to their general practitioner, and you know they haven't had the training, they don't have the resources, they may not be able to prescribe some of the medications that we would prescribe in the specialist field. Mm-hmm. So it can be very tough and frustrating for the general practitioner, but likewise for the patient as well. There's trichologists out there, which are not doctors but do have an education in hair, so they can often give good advice, and they can be a good triage service. So they can say to some people, well, you know, this is the problem and this is what we need to do, or no, actually you need to see a dermatologist. So yeah, it's another resource.
And Christophe, you're in the salon.
Yeah.
I'm sure that, well, have you noticed an increase in people sitting in the chair and sort of sensibly saying, are they asking you, does my hair look thinner? Is my hair falling out? Are they asking questions like that?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's going back to what Martin said as well. I think in terms of, you know, what's available today as well. So everyone kind of want to look its best. They want to look good, feel good. And hair is a big part of that as well. So we want to style it. We expect quite a lot out of hair. And there's so many different products now to use for us to be able to style it. So heated tongs, you know, there's extensions. The colour market is huge in terms of what products are out there, what we actually can do with hair now as well. So it's a big concern for a lot of people, because a lot of clients now want to colour their hair, they want to straighten it, they want to use tongs, they want to have hair extensions, and they're expecting quite a lot out of the hair. So for us, we hear that on a daily basis. So as a hairdresser, what's important for us to do is to educate the client and advise, almost like a bespoke sort of journey in terms of what they can have done as well, because every hair type is different, so texture, density is different from head to head as well. So it's almost like choosing what's more important. Is it more important to have really blonde hair? If that's the case, you might want to air dry the hair, or you might want to style it very naturally. If it's important for you to have a relaxer done, for example, you might not want to have colour so much. So yeah, it's by choosing, and we do hear it on a day-to-day basis because there's so much available now for clients to do with their own hair.
So do you think it's that the instances of thinning hair or hair loss are increasing? Partly because we're expecting too much of our hair, we're overtaxing it.
I think that's a big part of it, yes, absolutely. And then there's the other side as well, in terms of lifestyle. So what we notice a lot of in the salon at the minute is that a lot of people work a lot. Their lifestyle is, you know, hectic, there's a lot of stress in their life. And we see a lot of thinning from that as well, because they might not put a lot of goodness back into the body, or they're not looking after themselves, and then we see a result as of that on their hair.
And that's why actually that brings us to a really brilliant point of, as much as you can do things topically and to the actual hair,
yeah,
it's about what you can feed yourself, which I guess segues us beautifully into Eve. Because as I always say, it's like a pincer movement. You can do whatever you're doing to your actual hair, but your hair is ultimately fueled or nourished by what you eat, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, in naturopathic medicine, which is obviously how we work as nutritional therapists, it's all about treating sort of root causes, or to quote you, Martin O'Neill, getting to the bottom of the problem. I mean, I'm always about the gut. Sorry, that's a bit crass, but anyway. So, you know, you've got to think about what's going on from a much more internal perspective. You know, hair and nails and things like that can give an indication about how well the body's generally sort of functioning. And it is always good to sort of look at sort of root causes when you're looking at hair loss or breakage, or just changes in the quality of the hair, because those can be multiple and myriad. Obviously, if we're not necessarily giving our body the nutritional needs that it requires, then that's going to manifest itself potentially in changes in the hair. So if we're following, say, too restrictive diets, or we're taking out too many foods, which is more often the case that I see in my practice, that people have, you know, read some piece of information, they've started restricting their diet, then they remove one food group, then another, and then actually what they're ending up is nutritionally depleted, and then that manifests itself in the hair. But also coming back to Christelle's point about stress, like, you know, when we're just, you know, pummeling our adrenal glands that output some of the stress hormones like cortisol, that will negatively impact on the hair as well, and other sort of underlying hormonal conditions, things like underactive thyroid, for instance. Hair loss can be one of the main sort of symptoms of that. So, you know, I mean, yes, obviously we want to empower the reader here and say, you know, there are some tangible things they can do, but ultimately it's about finding out root causes. On the thing about what can they do, they can start with looking at their diet and just making sure that they are having sufficient amounts of protein, you know, specific to hair, but protein, omega-3 fatty acids, iron.
What does an omega-3 fatty acid look like? What do I have to eat in order to consume that?
The stinkiest, oiliest fish, basically, are going to be your best source of omega-3s. They're the most what's called bioavailable, so that's easier for our body to absorb sources. Organic grass-fed meat, you'll get some omega-3s through that. And then plant-based sources would be flaxseed and chia seed, but we don't convert them as efficiently. So unless you're obviously following a plant-based diet, then try to get them through the sort of oily fish. So you can look at your diet and see, you know, am I getting enough of that? Am I getting enough protein? Am I getting enough iron? Because even maybe making some shifts there might positively translate to the hair. But it, you know, it does take time. It's not going to be you eat a, you know, plate of salmon and then the next day your hair looks all, you know, vibrant and bouncy.
Yeah, because let's face it, everyone listening to this, everyone around this table, we're all trying to just live our best lives and try and have a good lifestyle. And if somebody thinks, actually, you know what, in order to live my best life, I need to drop a dress size or a certain amount of weight, you would instantly cut certain things out or maybe be a bit restrictive, not realizing that 3 months down the line that might show up in your hair.
Yeah, so I just think, yeah, you can, unfortunately that's just the way that I think we've been sort of led, or how society is now around the diet culture. But ironically, to lose weight sometimes you need to eat more food rather than less, and it's just about the getting the right amounts of nutrition in your diet. So you know, making sure that you're getting enough of, say, the proteins and things like that, rather than just cutting out food groups. I think, you know, hair aside, you can get into a lot of kind of negative sort of health consequences of that, and also develop a negative relationship with your food, create stress around your food, create more like generic stress. So, you know, even things like doing some meditation might be the best thing for your hair, which sounds a bit sort of far-fetched, but you know, in that kind of helping to manage the hormones that we produce when we're overly stressed.
It sounds like a very long way to get from A to B, to meditate, to get better hair. But actually, it is that dropping that cortisol is one thing, isn't it, that you can do? I mean, Martin, you must see this a lot, stress-related hair loss.
Yeah, absolutely. So quite often when someone presents with acute hair shedding, we're always looking at what's happened in the 3 months before. And one of the common triggers is a stressful situation. The other condition, alopecia areata, we know that it's an autoimmune condition. We know that there's a potential genetic basis to it. But the problem with the genetic theory is you have the same genes all your life. So why does a patch of hair loss present at a particular time? And really the only thing that we see with any frequency as a trigger is stress. And then, of course, once you start losing your hair, you become stressed about losing hair, and it can be a downward spiral. So the emotions and the psyche are actually very important for the hair.
And it flags up something really important, actually. Would you mind explaining the hair growth cycle? Because I think that's really important, because I think if you are going on a course, maybe you start taking VivaScal supplements or you start using topical solutions, I've been there. The next time you dry your hair, you're looking for denser hair, and obviously that's unrealistic. What is realistic based on the hair growth cycle?
Right. So if I just describe the hair growth cycle to start with, and interesting, a number of patients will say to me, oh, my hair stopped growing. Now, the hair doesn't stop growing unless you've had chemotherapy and it's all fallen out. So it's still growing. But on the scalp, the growth phase or the anagen phase lasts for between 2 to 5 years, some people even a bit longer. And that dictates how long you can grow your hair, so how long the hair fibre is in the growing phase. We then transition to the resting phase, which typically lasts about 3 months, the resting phase.
Can I just ask a dumb question about the growth phase? Is that from the point at which it starts growing out of the follicle and gets longer until it releases?
Yeah, well, even before that, from the point that it starts growing in the follicle, but the first sign of it would be when it pokes through the skin. Yeah, so that's the anagen phase, the growth phase. Okay. We've got the catagen phase, which is when it transitions from the growing phase to the resting phase. The resting phase is called telogen, and typically on a scalp, the resting phase is about 3 months. So that's why there's often a 3 month lag with a stressful event and hair loss or any intervention nutritionally with our diet for hair. And then the follicle then goes back into the growing phase again, so it's this constant cycle, and each hair on our scalp is what we call asynchronous. So we're not usually like cats and dogs and animals who have a molting phase, but every hair is at a different stage of the hair cycle on the scalp.
Okay, so anything that you do, you're basically, you've got to clock watch, you've got to wait for 3 months and then...
You have to give it some time. 3 months is a good time frame. With some of the medical conditions, we see regrowth a little earlier than that because we're stimulating a follicle that's already in the resting phase. But as a general rule, it's 3 months. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, more from this study, this study is absolutely fascinating, and so we've. 41% of women are currently experiencing or have previously experienced hair loss or some form of hair thinning. 40% of women say they are unhappy with the overall appearance and health of their hair, or the current appearance, sorry, and overall health of their hair. And Kim, I'm really interested to get your insight on this because I know that you speak to women every day, particularly women through VivaScal who use it. But it says 62% of women said that their hair gives them confidence. And that actually, like half of those people said, they strongly agree that hair loss and thinning has an immediate impact on how they feel about themselves?
I think it really does. I think it really, you know, our hair is a part of our identity. It's how we all see it. And, you know, we talk about things like, you know, hair being our crowning glory and having a bad hair day. And we don't take it lightly, because when it goes wrong, it really does impact on how we feel. And, you know, you can imagine if you suddenly look in the mirror one day and you think, I can see my scalp. Mm. You know, my parting looks much wider than it ever did. You know, or you're much more conscious of the hair that you're shedding. Mm. And I think for some people, it can actually put you into a bit of a panic. And, you know, I'm glad that the survey has come up with these stats that make it clear that it's much more common than most of us think. Most mm. women feel all alone with this problem. Mm. They've said to me, I'm like the only woman on the planet. Why is this happening to me? This shouldn't be happening to me. I'm a woman. Mm. It's not something that's talked about enough yet, that we accept that it's a natural thing that we go through mm. in different phases of our lives. And it can be through any number of causes. Mm. You know, it could be a medical issue. It could be because we've been on some kind of medication. It could just be that we're going through a hormonal change in our lives. Maybe we've had a baby, or we're menopausal. Mm. Could have had a very stressful event. Maybe, you know, we're on diet. And if you read the small print on some quite drastic diets, mm. it warns you that you may well mm. suffer hair loss as a consequence of wanting to lose weight in this way, which I always find quite incredible when you can see how much it really means to people.
And when you speak to women, is your main thing, and obviously men suffer with hair loss as well, we're not discriminating, but is it about saying to them, you're really not alone, this is completely normal? I think most women would expect to have a change in their hair, as you say, postpartum or around menopause, but actually it is now happening more as a stress trigger. So if you're working too much, maybe whatever else is going on.
Yeah, you're busy. It's very hard. I think having hair that you're happy with, the way nature intended, is difficult when you're busy. It's a difficult mm. balance to, you know, we sometimes just don't have time to eat properly, or we're eating on the run, or, you know, we don't stop to assess what we're eating for our body, let alone what we're eating for our hair, because your hair's the last place to benefit from the nutrition that you do get. Mm. And that's why it can be the first place to perhaps show signs that perhaps you are deficient in some way in nutrition. But I think people feel much better when they realise it's something that's quite common, it's something that can be, you know, helped, that often it's a temporary situation, it's a life stage situation, it's not, you know, this what's happening now isn't necessarily forever, and there are things you can do about it. And I think people feel better when they've taken that first step, when they've talked to their stylist, or, you know, even to an expert or a nutritionist. And I think, you know, people feel a bit more confident about the fact they've done something about it, that they've understood it better. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you know, will be taking supplements like Viviscal when they're conscious that they're coming up to a life stage that could play havoc with their hair.
Right.
You know, and so lots of people will be making sure their nutrition is supplemented to have the best hair that they can actually have, whatever stage they're at in life, and try and, you know, prevent these things becoming a much more traumatic problem
it's
for them.
It's future-proofing, isn't it? It's like,
yeah.
You know, you've got in a similar way, you might have a wedding coming up, so
yes.
You think, right, I'm going to make sure I've got my tans booked in, or whatever it might be that you do to prepare for a big event.
Yes,
I didn't
exactly
know
that.
That's really interesting,
yeah.
Future-proofing for your...
And think about it in advance, because like Dr. Martin said, it's like, you know, it's going to take time for you to see the detrimental effects on your hair from mm. whatever has caused it. And it's going to take equal time to start to see the remarkable results that the clinical studies have shown.
Do you find that, Martin, that people come in and they think, I don't understand, I'm eating right, I'm doing this right, why is it happening now? And then you have to sort of say, could we open your diary, please?
That happens more than you'd realise, actually, yeah. And things that people don't think are relevant, or things that, you know, that they forget about, you know, and then say, oh, no, that hasn't happened. And then when you push people or probe a little bit further, you'll find that, yep, they actually do have some lifestyle factors that could be affecting their hair. Sometimes people get so fixated on their hair that they do sort of forget that, as we were saying, it's a reflection on general health to some extent. So hair's highly metabolically active. So when the body's not performing at its optimum, it's one of the first things to go. So
because it's non-essential, isn't it, really?
Yeah, to us as humans now, it's non-essential. But
yeah.
More so than that, it's just because it's so highly metabolically active that the cell turnover time just needs a lot of energy, it needs all the nutrients, and if they're not there, it just doesn't grow as well.
And even something as basic as we all style or run a brush through our hair, maybe wash our hair every day, and I think probably everybody listening to this will think, well, I definitely lose a bit of hair every day. Does that mean I've got thinning hair?
Mm-hmm.
Does it?
No. So, I mean, it's absolutely normal to lose hair. I mean, as we said with the hair cycle, we're, constantly, it's a circle, it's a cycle. We're constantly renewing our hair. So that means we have to be shedding hair and we're regrowing hair. What the most important thing is whether there's a change in the degree of hair shedding. So people with a lot of hair will probably notice that they shed more hair. People who've got long hair will see more hair coming out just because the physical hair is longer. So if they curl it up into a ball, it's going to look bigger. But it's more the relativity. So if someone notices an increase, a shift in hair shedding, that's quite relevant. What I found is patients and people are very good at noticing the hair shedding. They're not so good at noticing the hair regrowth. Because that sneaks up on people. So the shedding's a quantifiable thing. Some people count their hair. Some people say, well, my hair shed ball was this size, now it's that size, so it's improved. But the regrowth sneaks up on them, basically. So they sometimes miss the fact that they're getting some good regrowth.
Is that because almost to see it, you have to get your hands in the hair and really pull it apart and go, look, can you not see those little sprouts?
Yeah, that's one thing. And also because it's a gradual recovery process as well. So it's like looking in the mirror. We don't necessarily see ourselves aging on a daily basis, but if we see a photo of us 5 years ago...
Speak for yourself, Martin.
We get a shock. We've got treatments for that as well.
Good to know. Let's talk details later. Now, as a woman who had alopecia in teen, now has like thin bits, but my hair is fine. I have a lot of it at the back, but it's fine. Can I, Martin, expert, can I change the quality of my hair?
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Now, can I make my hair thicker? The individual strands, can I increase my hair density?
Well, depends what you mean by density. So the number of follicles you have on your scalp is genetically determined, so we can't increase that at the moment. Lots of research going on with hair follicle cloning and stem cells and whatnot, but the number of hairs you've got on your scalp is set genetically and will unfortunately decrease with time. We're all getting thinner as we get older. But by having a healthy lifestyle, by being in good health, that can make your hair grow at the best ability that it can, basically. So a supplement like Viviscal has been designed to basically look at all the things that are thought to be essential for good hair growth and then put them in a supplement to provide the body with those nutrients. So that's the basis behind maximising the hair that you've got.
Because, Kim, you said something really interesting about women actually, and men, taking Viviscal, not because they're having any problem, but because they don't want to experience a problem. They just want their hair to be the best quality it can be.
Yeah, and that could be, like you said, triggered by something coming up, an event, a wedding, or just knowing that you're about to hit a life stage that could impact on your hair.
Yeah.
You may be premenopausal and think, now's the time to start thinking about looking after my hair better than I have perhaps before. And in my own experience, when I took Viviscal, I didn't necessarily think I had any kind of problem. I've got quite thick hair naturally. But I really did notice fairly early on, earlier than I expected actually, that the amount of hair I was shedding when I washed or brushed my hair decreased really significantly. So perhaps I was already beginning to lose hair, but hadn't really been aware of that. And I think perhaps you've lost quite a lot of hair before it's a visually noticeable difference that you will see, going back to the sort of looking in the mirror thing. And it's almost like by the time you really notice it and start to perhaps see a wider parting, or, you know, a diffuse thinning over the top of your head, or you might be in a lift and a bright light shines down and that's the first time you actually think, hang on a minute, why can you see the top of my skin through my hair? And that's when people go a little bit into panic mode, because it's already become quite a significant issue. So that's why people do quite like to think, well, I'm not quite sure about my diet, I'm not quite sure how good it is. Is my hair really getting what it needs through what I eat every day? Supplementing it with something designed specifically and proven to help make your hair grow the best it can be is what people often will go for.
Because the other thing about it is, if you're putting your faith in something, whether you have noticeable thinning or hair loss or anything, as you say, there's lots of choice out there, but this is the most researched supplement on the market.
Yes, Viviscal is the most clinically researched hair supplement that there is. There's been 10 global clinical studies published in scientific journals, and it's really the remarkable results from those studies that have got the experts like Martin and other, you know, trichologists and dermatologists and stylists actually kind of sitting up and taking notice and thinking, hang on a minute, there's something here that we can recommend, albeit maybe part of a holistic approach to addressing a problem for individual needs, because it's got clinical proof and years of 25 years of research and development have gone into developing this particular product. So it's quite unlike a lot of the other products that are out there.
And holistic is key. This is why we have such a big panel today, because we wanted to draw on everyone's expertise. Now, Crystal, I'd be really interested to find out from you, if someone's listening to this podcast and they feel that they're experiencing hair loss, or they feel that their hair is much, much thinner than it used to be, and they actually may be a bit fearful about going to the hairdresser, or they don't really know what to do, so they're sort of not even doing much, is there a style? Is there a way of cutting the hair that will optimise how it can look?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the beauty with hair as well, and I think that's where colour very much comes into it as well, because you can create illusions of the hair looking thicker and stronger by working with different palettes, for example. So generally a darker colour will create a bit more strength, a bit more fullness, and it will give the appearance of the hair looking slightly fuller, whereas a blonder palette creates a bit more texture, and it's designed to create sort of movement in the hair. And sometimes that's not always the best sort of palette to go for if you're sort of having hair that's a little bit finer, or you're suffering from thin hair. But there's tons of stuff you can do, especially with styling as well. There's so many different sort of styles and shapes and movements that you can apply to the hair. So you can cut it slightly shorter, you can, you know, style it differently. It all depends on the texture of the hair and the length of the hair as well. So there's so many things that you can do to help it.
So it's not just a case of just go shorter or just get a blunt cut?
No, absolutely not. So I think if you have really long hair and you noticing that it's getting really almost a bit sort of like chewing gum like towards the ends, because that sometimes happens if you don't have a haircut and then the hair is in poor condition, in those cases, yeah, you would probably have to cut it a bit to make it look healthier. But there's no reason why you couldn't have long hair. You could still have long hair, but maybe less layers in it. So you want it blunt cut or one length, for example. So there's tons of different stuff that you can do to make the hair look and feel thicker.
If you have the sort of traditional female pattern baldness and it's your hairline around there,
yeah,
are there particular styles? Like, would you say don't do a fringe, or would you say actually do a fringe, but do a thicker fringe? Like, are there any sort of key...
Yeah, I think it's working with it rather than against it. So you can definitely do that. So I was talking to someone the other day about this, a client. So she has a very receding hairline, and we cut a very soft 70s fringe in, because that just softened that sort of hairline a bit. So rather than having it really full and thick, we made it look a little bit wispy and slightly thinner to make her feel a bit more confident and to sort of hide those areas.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
To go thinner and wispy.
Yeah, rather than too thick. Because I think if you if you're putting in a thick fringe, you need to have the density there for it to look super good. So, yeah, there's definitely different sort of things that you can do to work with the hair rather than against it. And I think same thing, if you're noticing that your hairline is becoming thinner, try not to scrape the hair back, wear it down, because a lot of women do that. They scrape it back and then you can see it, and then you put a bit of tension on the hair as well. So you could just wear it down, make it look a bit more natural.
I mean, I've talked about this in this podcast before, when I used to do marathon training, and I remember saying, oh gosh, my hair really does feel thinner, and my friend Katie said, well, clip your fringe and then do your ponytail, because you're putting so much pressure on your hair. And I didn't realise that. I mean, I was giving myself accidentally, so I wouldn't get a sweaty fringe in the morning. Traction alopecia, basically.
And we see that a lot. I think sometimes it's just, again, working with your hair rather than against it, and just being a bit more thoughtful. You know, especially if you have fine hair, you need to just look after a little bit more. And again, tension, for example, scraping the hair back, using clips that might not be hair friendly, for example, because that can create friction and tension and ultimately result in hair thinning and hair loss as well. So
do you think people, because I know I am, so I'm not casting aspersions, can be too rough with their hair? Like when they're lathering up in the shower, like brushing it, just like, oh, I'm going to be quick, and then you look and it's just like, calm down.
Definitely. We see that quite a lot. I think, again, sometimes people don't feel that they have time, so they just do something that's really quick. Again, if you have a lot of colour in the hair, you need, your hair is sensitised, so you need to be a little bit more thoughtful and careful with it. So
both types of colour, both bleach-based
Maybe a little bit more towards the lighter palette, so anything that's bleach-based or high lift tints, etc. Darker colours tends to be a little bit more nourishing on the hair because of all the conditioning agents, etc., and what it actually does to the hair. But when you're lightening hair, you're actually removing structure out of the hair. So you need to make sure that you're putting goodness back into it. And that's why Viviscal is so fantastic hair supplement, because it has so much goodness in there. But also aftercare products. So when you have lighter hair...
So actually, if you were taking somebody quite light... And you, would you potentially give them an option and say, look, this diet's going to look great on you. Trust me, you're going to look amazing. But for the health of your hair, this might be a good idea, seeing as you're going down this particular kind of path with colour.
100%. And it's about taking responsibility over your client as well. So especially if you have a client that naturally has fine hair, like myself, there's only so much I can do to my hair. So I know it's important for me to take supplements. I have to do that. But I also need to choose, do I want to have really blonde hair or do I want to blow dry my hair? So I can't do both. I have to choose what's more important, because heated tools can create damage as well, and then again create thinning effects. So same thing with tongs. So if you're really blonde, you probably have to choose, do you want to tong your hair every day? Because you might not be able to.
Interesting. So I think that's a really, really brilliant way that I hadn't even thought about, of using something like the Viviscal supplement, is if you go on a path of lightening your hair.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a protective, almost like doing a weekly mask or something, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. Because I think, as a hairdresser, you know, hair is a fabric for us. We work with it every day, so it has to be in the best condition. And that cosmetic feel is so important, and that's what gives a lot of clients confidence as well. When the cosmetic feel is great, when it feels amazing, it gives people confidence, and that's what they want to feel every day.
It comes back to what you were saying as well, Kim, about using the supplement not as a, oh goodness, I'm in this now. It comes back to it as using it as a, this is just part of my lifestyle. I choose to make sure I'm nourishing my hair from within.
And people will do that, and then they'll enjoy the results themselves, but they may then find that they perhaps don't need to keep taking it. It's not something you've got to, you know, take forever. You may find, actually, I'm really happy with my hair now. Perhaps I'll, you know, some people go down to just taking one a day at that stage or something like that. Some people will never want to stop, because they just, it becomes like they just love it so much. It's like they're not going to leave it behind. But I think, you know, when you're fearful of losing your hair, and you were asking about, you know, what can you do with it? I spoke to women who are scared to touch their hair, let alone wash it, you know. know, it's like they become paranoid that if anybody comes near it, they're going to lose even more. And I think you just need the right advice and reassurance to know that it's okay to still wash your hair, and it's okay to give it the time it needs to recover, and just feel confident that you've taken that first step, really.
I've told this story on the podcast before, but I went to a hairdresser's and they went to go and do something to my hair, and I just flew forward into the mirror because I was like, do not use that on my hair, please, thank you, goodbye, kind sir. I want to ask you, Christelle, is it okay if someone isn't feeling confident about their hair? We know from the survey that 41% of women not only are saying that they're having it, but 40% are saying they're unhappy with the appearance. Mm. So your obvious next step is, if I'm not happy with the appearance, I'm going to go into a salon. I'm going to go and seek an expert's advice. How do you feel about somebody saying, can I come in and have a 15-minute chat about my hair because it's thin and fine and I do want to do something with it, but I don't want to take up a full consultation? Because they need to feel out the stylist and understand whether they know how to work with that kind of hair texture.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I really support that. I think we should encourage that as hairdressers. And in my business, that's something that we do a lot on a daily basis as well. We actually consult everyone. It's a bespoke service. So for any colour services, for example, we have a consultation first before we actually book the appointment. Mm-hmm. And I think especially if you're concerned about your hair, if you have, you know, thinning hair, for example, it doesn't feel great, that's the best thing to do. Go in and have a chat to a hairdresser, to a professional, because that's your chance to sort of voice your opinion in terms of how you feel about it. Mm. And then the hairdresser can listen to your sort of feedbacks, your thoughts, and then guide you and advise you on a journey and a plan and what you actually need.
Mm. And also tell you what's realistic with your hair.
100%. And I think hairdressers, we need to take responsibility and a bit ownership, and that's why it's so important to have a bespoke sort of journey for each individual, because your hair will be very different to someone else's hair. So 100%.
Yeah, and I always say we're so polite in the UK. We're polite all around the world, aren't we, listeners? But we'd sit in a chair and have a haircut that we knew wasn't going to work and live with it for however many months, rather than upset the stylist. So anyway, the other thing I was going to bring up from this survey, this actually really made me think, and this is that 28% of women think that the problem will just go away. And Martin, I guess you might be the best person to come to ask about that. Mm-hmm. Will it just go away? Can it just right itself?
Well, once again, it boils down to what the cause is. So there are conditions where it can improve. Mm-hmm. So if it's some hair shedding following an anxious time or shock, or if it's an illness, then the hair can improve by itself. I think it was interesting what was said before about how much hair we need to lose before we notice that we've lost hair. And often there's the light bulb moment of, away on holiday somewhere sunny and we can see mm-hmm. Our scalp through our hair, or in a changing room with a bright light, or someone might make a comment and then all of a sudden we notice that we've lost some hair. There then tends to be a denial phase with a lot of people. Oh, so they'll oh no, it's not really happening, it's not that bad, I'll see if it gets better. And depending on the cause, sometimes it does. So if the hair loss or hair shedding is only very mild, it may be quite appropriate to sweat it out and maybe look at lifestyle factors and think about something like VivaScale. But if it's an ongoing progressive problem, that's when you need to seek medical attention.
Some 30% of women said they were too embarrassed, and this was a survey of 2,000 women, 30% they said they were too embarrassed to go and see a doctor. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate everyone's thoughts on that, actually. Like, should we feel embarrassed to go and see the doctor, or should we just take ownership of it? Is it a real concern?
Because
we're being bombarded with lots of information that, you know, our doctor's time is very busy, we've only got a few minutes, like, don't waste their time. But this isn't time wasting, is it?
No. So, we should never feel embarrassed to talk to our doctor about anything, basically. So, that's what the doctor's there for, to sort out our health. I guess with hair, it's not always a priority. As I said before, a lot of general practitioners haven't had the medical training, and it's not their fault. It's just not in the curriculum of their university. So they often can't give great advice because they're just not sure what to advise. So I think that's where some of the, I feel embarrassed or I feel self-conscious or I'm wasting the doctor's time, because they realise how busy general practitioners are, and, people think, well, it's not
cancer or it's not heart or anything like that. But actually, I mean, the first port of call could actually be the general practitioner or a healthcare professional, just to talk about the concerns that you may have.
Yeah. And when you think about it, when it causes you such anxiety and stress, if you don't address that cause of the anxiety and stress, i.e. the hair loss problem, if the doctor is quite dismissive, which I've heard women say, they sometimes feel they go away without having been helped, and because then they feel like they did waste time because of the reaction they got. But actually, if it's going to compound the stress and the anxiety that person's feeling, then ultimately, longer term, presumably, that's going to have a negative impact on their health. So it's a bit of a vicious cycle, and it's really important to give people the support when they're kind of brave enough to ask for it. Because, you know, I think instinctively people try to hide the problem first and try, and like you say, go into denial and feel like, as a woman, I shouldn't acknowledge this is happening to me. I'm not going to tell anybody. You know, I think it's really important to keep the conversation going so that people feel like comforted by the fact they're not alone, it's a common problem, and that there are places you can go and you can talk to people and have your hand held through a journey of recovery. So I think, you know, shouldn't underestimate the impact that stressful feeling can cause.
Well, more seriously as well, you know, it could be a sign of something a bit more serious or significantly more serious. So you shouldn't, if you notice a change in the body that's quite dramatic, then you should go and see your GP. But I don't know, it's interesting when you said about when you were in the salon and you were like, no, don't put that on my hair. Like, the juxtaposition of that is, like, from a dietary perspective, we do not think twice about reading some article without any research whatsoever and start cutting things out of our diet. So true. I think where moderation in our diet should be, or we should be much more self-critical with it before we start implementing massive changes in our diet as well. In the same way that we really take care of our appearance and our hair, and like people really think about the types of makeup they're going to put on or the types of products, they don't actually necessarily think about what they're doing when they do like go into sort of, I'm talking more about like really restrictive diets now and that type of thing, because, you know, ultimately that's not a good thing. So I think
you read one article and all of a sudden you've gone down to the
carbs are like
shop.
You know, banned for life, that type of stuff. And it's, you know, it's that type of reaction from a nutritional perspective, which I find is quite interesting, really, when, like you said, everybody's really like, you wouldn't dream of having somebody like touch your hair in a way that or cut it in a way that you didn't feel was right for you, and you take time to think about that and have a consultation about color. You wouldn't just go in, I mean, you might, but most people don't, right?
But I think I'm ballsy in the hairdressers, in the stylist chair, because of my job, and so I know what's going to happen, and so I'm not polite. I'm thinking I don't want that to happen to me, so I will bolt forward. But I know plenty of people who have come out of the hairdressers and called me up and said, I'm so upset.
I would sit there, watch it go wrong, and not say a word, because I'd be almost, I might say, oh, I'm not quite happy with this little bit here, or I might try and be very gentle in how I approach it. But you're right, I think we're too polite sometimes. We you know, it's our hair, and you do worry sometimes when somebody approaches it in a way you wouldn't, especially if it's something you're already concerned and worried about.
And I'm just, you probably have, I mean, I'm sure you all have, the emotional impact of it, the emotional impact of feeling that your hair is not right. And how, I know when I've sat with a trichologist or I've sat with a stylist when I was much younger, I just cried. I just cried because it was so upsetting, and I felt like I didn't want people to see me. I felt like, oh, I can't go out, or I'm not pretty like other girls. Like, all of these awful things that we do to ourselves.
And that goes right the way through from when you're very young, right the way to, you know, much older ladies, you know. If your hair goes wrong in later life, people assume, oh, you're not going to worry too much. What are you worried about your hair for now? But actually, it's not true at all. You know, older women in old age can really, really feel the same trauma and stress when their hair starts to thin. And it's always going to be a part of your identity. And, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are or how young you are. When it goes wrong, it can really, really affect you. And you just sometimes need to think about the simple ways you can help yourself.
Now, Eve, I've come to you, I've seen you in your practice as a patient, and I, at that point, it was like, IBS, I'm stressed, I'm bloating, and it was very much that. At what point during the consultation are you noticing more that people will be like, I'm bloated, I'm stressed, oh, and I think my hair's a bit thin? Is it sort of coming in as a stronger part of the dialogue now with your patients?
Actually, I'd say it's the other way around. It's like, right, I'm having spots, my skin's changed, my hair's falling out. Oh, and by the way, I've had digestive issues for 20 years and I don't go to the toilet, right? So actually, it's just that reality of that is your, that's how the world, the world sees you, literally, right? Mm. You can have had a stomach, you know, bloating out like, you know, nobody's business for a long time before you sort of address that. And that comes back down to, you know, we're not necessarily always we are what we eat, but we are what we absorb. Mm-hmm. And the hair's quite a good indication of that. A lot of things related to hair, that the health of the hair can be to do with what's happening from a digestive perspective, like as in how much you're absorbing, your gut health as well. Because even coming down from a genetic perspective, so some people are more genetically predisposed to having thicker or thinner hair, but it's then how you bathe those genes, right? Mm. And we know that gut bacteria house 8 million genes versus our 23,000. So when you think about that from a genetic perspective, you've got to start supporting your gut health. I mean, I am like a gut health evangelist, obviously, but I'm just saying it's much more when we think about hair loss, I think it's just more complicated, and we shouldn't just necessarily focus on one thing specifically, and we have to look at our whole lifestyles. And that's your body's indication of telling you that maybe if there's been changes, that it's just not happy. So you just have to bring back that sort of balance, that homeostasis in the body. And I think that's where, you know, a supplement can help, like Viviscal can help start somebody's journey on not just thinking about what they're putting on their hair, but what they're doing from an inside perspective as well.
Because you used a lot of long words there, which bamboozled me somewhat.
I'm sorry.
No, it's me being daft. But the thing is, with these Viviscal supplements, there's something in the data here about basically maximising the benefits in conjunction with taking digestive enzymes and probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts?
Definitely probiotics. I mean, I think the amount that our gut is sort of bombarded with on a day-to-day basis, it's good to have, or again, in the same way that you might negate hair loss by taking a supplement now for prevention, the same is true for helping your gut health. Again, thinking about the quality of supplements, and that's why Viviscal has, the quality of the ingredients are really thought out and researched and what have you.
I must admit, when I saw that you were prepared to talk about them, I thought, well, they must be legit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big stickler for research and studies, particularly independent trials, which these guys have had and have for many years. I'm not an advocate of pill popping. I mean, obviously, I believe in diet first. So you can't, even with such a great supplement, you can't just take that and not focus on your diet as well. But supplements that can work with that, yes, I do think that to maximise the absorption of not just the supplement, but your gut health generally, helping to support that with a good quality probiotic could be a good thing. But again, with that, do your research. Yeah. Make sure you've got a good one.
Now, Kim, tell us about, because it's May, we're recording this in May, which is a special month, is it not?
Yes, it's Hair Loss Awareness Month. And that's something that Viviscal actually spearheaded back in 2008 to really try to get this conversation happening. It wasn't really every day back then that you'd pick up a magazine or read an article and female hair loss was even ever mentioned. So it didn't help these women that felt all alone with the problem. So we wanted to get it sort of onto the agenda to get people talking about it. And I think, it's improved a lot, but it's surprising. It's not until it's part of your world that you become aware of what's going on out there and what people are talking about and what you can do about it. So you can feel a little bit lost. And so I think it's really good that we're having this chat today. And it's good for people to, just talk amongst your friends. You might find you're not the only one, even in your peer group, even in your, that's perhaps a bit worried about this problem. And, I think, sharing a problem always helps, and sharing solutions is what this is all about. So I think keeping that conversation going is so important, and that's where the study results help with that.
Well, I think on this show we love conversations and we love shared experiences, but we also love a bit of data, and the fact that it's showing that so many women are feeling affected by this, whether it's affecting their self-esteem or whether it's affecting their I don't know how, well, self-esteem, how they feel about themselves, whether they will go to a doctor about it, whether they feel like they can be taken seriously. It's obviously a
whether they'll
issue.
Even go out in public. Yeah, some yeah. women feel that they just, I'm going to stay indoors, I'm not going to be seen like this, you know. And it can be so damaging, and
yeah.
and actually, you know, people need the little bit of help and support. And and you know, I always say, I think you talked about, you know, your hair is perhaps it's much more about what you put in it than we're ever going to put on it. We're all conscious of the hair we see, the hair that's here. When we meet someone, it might be the first thing that we notice. Mm-hmm. But not many of us stop to think about, where's it coming from? What do I do to make sure that hair stays good mm-hmm. and still looks nice in the future? And we don't, it's, to me, it's the most important step in any hair care routine, is to think about the nourishment that your hair's getting. And if it's not getting that nourishment through your daily diet, and let's face it, most of us don't really know what we should be eating. Yeah, we've heard some good advice today, and, you know, oily fish and some of the other ingredients that you've mentioned, but to have something that brings it to you in a daily dose every day, the blend that's been scientifically researched and clinically studied to show that it can help with your the nourishment that your hair needs.
And we're talking about 30 years as
it's
well.
Such
it's
an easy
like,
thing
it's
to do
been around for a while.
Yes,
it's updated,
yeah,
improved.
How easy is it to decide to take two small coated tablets a day and know that you've actually taken a huge step to improving your own hair care routine? However big the problem you might have or not is, it's such an easy thing. But we don't really stop to think about that. We're so focused on the styling, the colour, the way our hair looks to other people, the way we feel about it. We don't stop to think about the importance of the nutrition and the fact that if your body is lacking, your hair's not going to be getting that nutrition from your diet.
Which is why I'm so glad we've been able to talk to all of you today to get all of your perspectives. I think you all come from a very knowledgeable place, not only because of your expertise, but because you speak to women every single day, men and women, every single day who are experiencing this and suffering with this. So thank you so much. It goes without saying, listeners, that all of the links to Martin, Christelle, Eve and Kim will be in the show notes, as well as the links to the data and the supplements and everything that has been mentioned during the show. But for now, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with the show, simply email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com, or you can always slide into my DMs on social media, where I am at Emma Guns on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to talk to me and thousands of other listeners of this podcast, then click the link in the show notes and join that closed Facebook group. Answer those three questions and the conversation can begin. Thank you so much. I will see you on the next one.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.